Homeland Security and Government Affairs Subcommittee member Jean Shaheen summarized the national PFAS problem.
This is an issue that affects tens of millions of people across the country. The cost of cleanup to address this is tens of billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And we don't even know yet what the long-term health impacts are.
Senator Shaheen is from New Hampshire, home to Pease Air National Guard Base in Portsmouth, where groundwater has been contaminated with PFAS. Andrea Amico, co-founder of the group Testing for Pease, pushed for consistency in government agencies' approach to PFAS contamination.
Why is Vermont lowering a standard to 20 parts per trillion for five different PFAS when the EPA is saying 70 parts per trillion for two different PFAS? And then we're seeing New Jersey propose lower standards. We're seeing Massachusetts and Connecticut take five different PFAS into consideration for their 70 parts per trillion. So it's very confusing for community members, and it's also very alarming. Why? What are these states seeing? What science are they analyzing that they're coming to these different numbers? We need a much more consistent and coordinated approach.
There are thousands of PFAS chemicals, and Alaska is one of the states that recently changed its health advisory level to include more of the more common compounds under the EPA threshold. The EPA number is based on two common PFAS chemicals, but the director of the agency's Office of Ground and Drinking Water, Peter Gravatt, told the committee the EPA stands behind it.
We believe that our health advisories are supported by the strongest science.
Gravatt said the EPA plans to release a national PFAS management plan by the end of the year, which could include a recommendation that PFAS chemicals be classified as hazardous, a designation that would empower the EPA to better address the problem.
The authority to both order cleanup actions at contaminated sites and also recover costs that are expended by the agency for those actions.
Gravatt cautioned the designation would take years to finalize. In the meantime, questions remain about human health effects of PFAS. Linda Birnbaum with the National Institutes of Health testified that research reveals statistically significant associations between PFAS exposure and specific human health problems.
These include potential effects on children's cognitive and neurobehavioral development, immune system dysfunction, endocrine disruption, obesity, diabetes, lipid metabolism, and cancer.
Birnbaum pointed to the water-soluble chemicals' long-term persistence, both in the environment and human bodies. New Hampshire's Andrea Amico told the committee there needs to be more health screening.
Blood testing for impacted community members, and we also need to provide medical monitoring, which is a program that folks can participate in with their physicians to better understand or to better monitor their health in the setting of the exposure.
PFAS chemicals are used in a wide range of products, and most of the general public tests positive for them at low levels. Ingestion of PFAS through water contaminated by firefighting foams is a common exposure pathway. PFAS firefighting foams have long been required by the FAA, but PFAS-free types are being developed, and Senator Gary Peters of Michigan said a switch to them will be mandated.
We're going to be changing that as we move the FAA reauthorization forward, as we look at alternatives.
The FAA bill was recently passed by the U.S. House and now goes to the Senate. The Senate subcommittee working on the PFAS issue will continue to take public testimony through October 11th. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.